Thanks for tuning in to the HR Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Lucinda Carney. The HR Uprising is focused on helping forward-thinking people professionals deliver real lasting value in their organisations. I'm a chartered psychologist, speaker and trainer, and recently authored the best-selling business book, How to Be a Change Superhero. My day job is founder and CEO of software and training business Actus. This gives me the opportunity to work with other businesses like yours. We are focused on building a better workplace for people wherever they are located, with the help of our performance, learning and talent management software and our training and consultancy services. Every week on the podcast, I will be covering different topics and challenges, joined by relevant experts and real-life people professionals. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy and get value from this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's HR Uprising podcast. And this week we're talking about how we can bring our mental health strategy to life. Unfortunately, something I think that's very practical and relevant for us right now. Now, in order to do that, I'm really delighted that I've got mental health consultant, psychotherapist, Petra Belzebor, who's joining me. And also you've got your own mental health consultancy in London, haven't you? So this is where you're bringing this from. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit further? And then also let's hear about how you got into this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Lucinda, on your podcast. So the business is called PVL. We do training and development and really support organizations to get that strategy piece right. So how can you get the foundation of mental health right in order to then bring it to life through behaviors, through leadership, a whole host of other things. And this is, I guess, the recent world has exaggerated the need for mental health services in the workplace. And for me, it's a deeply passionate kind of direction. I think for many of us in the mental health space, it is. But also, you may find it surprising, but I was born and raised in a religious cult. And that might be like, whoa, left field, what podcast are we listening to? But there's these weird similarities between like a cult environment and a toxic workplace. So it's kind of inspired me a little bit to help people identify how do we create healthy workplaces.
Wow, I've got to say, that's such an attention grabber. I would like to hear the parallels because I think that's really interesting, just and engaging for us to understand those links. But also, I particularly like the reason when we were talking about this podcast, this idea of a strategy. So rather than as it's very tempting, isn't it, to go fix mental health or HR are given a premise where they've got to put an intervention in place, but it's very, very short term and may or may not therefore have a benefit. But really what we need to be looking at is longer term strategies to have lasting support systems in place for our people, I guess. So where's the best place to start, Petra, in terms of what you brought you to this and maybe the links? Let's set the scene, actually. Tell us a bit about why is a cult, toxic culture similar to a cult?
Well, what I read this great book about this, and of course, having my personal experience, it highlighted it. And it starts with a founder, a passionate CEO, a leader who wants to create change in whatever industry they're in, right? People get drawn to this idea, they want to get involved. And over time, you get this middle management level, right? You now need structures, you need processes. HR are very familiar with all of those things, right? But you kind of lose touch with that original founder or CEO. The vision or the message is now sort of diluted through those processes, those structures, and certainly through middle management, which, as you'll know, can be such a variety of people, some of which have people skills, some of which really don't, right? They've been promoted because of their technical skill, but don't have those people skills. And that's when that toxicity can come in, ego, rules, leadership styles that can affect how comfortable people are bringing their full selves to work. Those are some of the parallels.
Actually, that's very interesting because I think that positions this podcast, even though we talked about a mental health strategy, it's not just at medium or large size businesses. I'm thinking in particular in smaller businesses that are growing, that's exactly where the sort of founder message gets diluted, just as you're scaling up. And how do you make sure that maybe the founder is really caring, they're charismatic, they're, but somehow that gets lost along the way.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to know the difference between a strategy and an action plan. And what I see in well-being spaces is that these get convoluted. So now it gets very complicated. We get very overwhelmed. We think we need to know where we're headed. We're living in a world of uncertainty. It's hard to plan 3-5 years out, right? So I like to separate those out. And so the first step in the strategy is having a clear direction or mission statement, as I would put it, with some really simple objectives next to things like culture, prevention, and access to support. So we sometimes go very heavy into the crisis end. It's like, what do we do in a terrible situation? But really, mental health is about everybody. It's the health of our mind. It's just like physical health. It's how do we thrive and cope in an uncertain world? And so that's how I would just kind of divide it first, because your strategy, that mission and vision, can almost be evergreen and apply even to a global business. Whereas the action plan, the awareness days, the initiatives, the mental health champions, these sorts of things, that can be really localized in different offices, different environments, in different countries and cultures.
Okay, so I like that. And this sort of, so anyone can take that strategy, really. Anyone can take those three headings. We could take that straight off the podcast and say, right, my strategy, we need to just have a clear statement of direction, and then we can have action plans underneath those. So you've talked about culture, prevention, and access to support. So if we have the culture is almost the higher level prevention, I suppose, if you don't have a toxic cover, then prevention and more of a local level, maybe manager or someone who's got stuff going on externally, and then where people are actually in trouble, access to support. I'm saying a bit like a funnel really there, hopefully a reverse funnel, because you want to block it from filling. What would you say as a statement then? What would be an example of something that might fit into each of those three areas?
So what we'd work with people on is their own blue sky thinking, as we call it. So like, if you had all the resources in the world, what would you imagine your culture to be like? What would you want it to include? How would you want your leaders to show up? You know, just really mapping it out. So it's a little bit, personal for each business. But getting that process done gives you some space. And then bring in your champions, your leaders, a focus group of people to help then define what the language is that's going to be appropriate to your company. So I've worked with a big media company. Their language is dynamic and is aligned with their overall brand. Whereas in a construction company, their language is a little bit more geared to health and safety and a little bit more aligned to their brand. So this is where you want it to really fit the industry that you're in and the people all across the business.
I want to go on to the other two points, but an observation that sprung to mind there is why it's really important to recruit the right people for your culture as well. Because actually, one person's health, let's say I'm somebody who really loves it to be fast moving, and I get recruited into a different, perfectly good environment for someone else. Just if it's not the right fit, you could actually find it stressful, I imagine, and that could be detrimental, even though there's nothing sort of officially wrong with the culture.
Absolutely. And that's where this strategy vision piece is where you're headed. But over time, we would support people to think about the policies, recruitment plans, induction. So new starters, what do they know about? But this is all part of bringing it to life, right? How do you put in the pieces that will enable people to understand that culture effectively and the part that they're expected to play within it?
Yes. And therefore, and also it means that this whole thing we talk about employer brand, it's got to be genuinely reflective of what the culture is. Otherwise, you're attracting the wrong people. OK, so I get that. So it's actually do your focus groups, find out what we want it to be. But it's got to be something that's realistic for the sort of people you are, the sort of industry you are, sort of business that you're in. Then what would you talk about if you were talking about prevention or access to support?
So the access to support might be, you know, we want it to be inclusive. Remember, we also don't want this to be stuck in a silo of like, this is just the mental health component, but you may have inclusion and diversity. You've got other things going on. And it's incredible to me how little some of these departments talk to each other sometimes, right?
Yes.
So I try and bring them all together and go, what's the inclusion and diversity plan? What's the health and safety plan? L&D, leadership training, you know, how do we align all of this and bring it all together? So we would hope that some of those objectives around prevention would be, as you said, middle management have an understanding and awareness of how to approach this topic with their people. Now, the action plan may say how that's going to happen through this L&D program, through our induction process, through some e-learning, whatever that might look like. But we want to go, well, we're looking at all the components of the business. Who needs to be brought in order to deliver these pieces effectively? And again, you've got to brainstorm with your business to think what's fit for purpose for you. What stage are you at in the process? Some people have been doing lots around this, but just need to bring it all together. Some people are still in the early stages of their business and need to start small.
And build self-awareness. And it's interesting that whole, all these topics, we've had different episodes on the topics on the podcast, some are before and after this, but in terms of broadcasting it. but there's massive overlap. I'm just kind of seeing this overlap, exactly as you say, this diversity and inclusion. If we have an inclusive culture of, you know, all types, then that's also going to support people's mental health, or, you know, or count, or the opposite. Training, if we're running training courses, having aspects not just on, you know, leadership, how to, you know, people management, the way in which managers are having performance management conversations with people is going to support or not support their mental health. If we're this whole psychological trust, you know, mentioned employer brand, it's all woven in, isn't it? And so we've got to make sure it's a holistic aspect to this. So those are the sort of things that, I suppose, those are strategies. By pulling all those departments together, that's going to support your prevention, I guess. And then would you go access support is more if someone's in crisis?
So it's crisis, but again, these are helping people have some structure around their strategy. But from my perspective, your employee assistance programs, your mental health champions, your first aiders, these should be places where people feel comfortable to go before they're absolutely in crisis, right? And that's part of the education piece, I think, and understanding what resources you have in place. Because if you're comfortable, I mean, with my team, we talk to each other really openly. So in a team meeting, we'll say, how's your mental health been this week? That's how forward we are with the questioning, right? And sort of radical in our thinking. But the education has happened. So we're not saying, are you feeling depressed? We're saying, how are you investing in yourself? How's family life? How are you feeling? How are you able to be productive this week, right? And so it's widening out what mental health looks like, which I think is relatable now in a world of hybrid working, uncertainty. Everybody is impacted by this, having kids at home, whatever your situation is. But how can we incorporate, this is the piece around bringing it to life, some of the well-being, mental health related questions into our team meetings, into our one-to-ones, into our performance reviews, and into that overall strategy piece.
So let's stick with that as just explore that, because that's quite an interesting question to ask, isn't it? And some might feel loaded, or some people might feel very scared about that because they might not know what to do with the answer. In the same way, actually, probably slightly harder, let's say, for a line manager and their direct report, because that's one-to-one and they feel responsible for dealing with the responses. And if they don't answer in a way that they want to, they don't know what to do with it, which we probably have had experiences in the past of people, you know, showing emotion in the workplace, going back a bit. That was, people didn't know how to deal with it quite often. So obviously you've got people who are comfortable talking about mental health in your group of people, but you might not always have been there, or maybe you self-coached each other to get there. Any tips as to how you might introduce that? So let's say I'm an HR professional and I'm sitting with an exec team, or I'm an HR business partner and I'm sitting with, you know, other peers. How could you introduce that safely, or encourage people to try it out and maybe address their concerns about what to do with the answers?
Absolutely. I mean the first thing to be clear on is we're a mental health business, and it's important to us to lead by example. So we are going to go right through to the radical approach on testing this stuff ourselves, practicing psychological safety in order to model and then communicate with others what might work for them. So I get the fears. When we do leadership training, there's the fear of Pandora's box. If we start this question, you know, and then as you say, well, I won't know what to do with the response. And then they refer them all to HR, right? And then you guys are busier than ever. Go talk to someone. But also that they won't know how to fix it, right? And a leader and a manager wants to be able to fix it. So a lot of our training is just around empathy and holding space. We don't have to have the answers and to fix this, which is very counterintuitive for like a project manager or somebody who's used to fixing things. We'll also explore where is that business at and where is a good place to start. Now, in construction companies where there's a high sort of prevalence of men, they'll often do how are you out of 10. They like a number. They like, it's like a safe little way to not have to tell the whole story, but to say I'm a 3 today or I'm an 8 today, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a safe little kind of check-in question. For other people, it might be starting with what's one challenge that you're facing and doing it in a little breakout group or a one-to-one so that people have space for human connection. Now, in this hybrid remote world, this is the theme alongside well-being and mental health that is coming up more and more. Connection and belonging. How do we enhance a feeling of connection and belonging? And if you understand that those components are under the mental health umbrella, it now frees you up to ask any types of questions that will enhance connection and belonging. Does that make sense? And if, yeah. for another company for, with it, here's a provocative question though. When's the last time your group of HR business partners sat around and asked each other how their mental health was?
Brilliant question as well, actually, in terms of the networking. That was so useful. I thought actually just the whole concept of you can make it safe for certain environments. And I'm thinking where I've been to networking groups where people have talked about, is it an albatross? There's an ABC, like is it an albatross, a bear, or what's worrying you at the moment kind of thing. They'd have a metaphor for it, which was a safe way to bring things through. And that was in a networking session of, and it was mainly men, business support type thing. But again, it worked to get people talking and opening up. That was probably about their business stuff. So it's almost applying the same methodology to how you feel. I thought those are really nice, safe ways to get people to open up. And then be empathetic, demonstrate empathy. It's not about fixing it. It's about hearing people and being supportive.
Another great question is, what's one thing you're proud of? So if we have a positive psychology approach, it's not always looking for what's wrong. And this is sometimes the trouble, I think, with the first aid approach or even the champion approach, is we're looking for signs and symptoms the whole time. What's wrong? Is that depression? Is that anxiety? Is that this? Is that that? When actually Sean Acor has a great TED talk about positive psychology and about what a wellness week looks like rather than a sickness week. We focus on mental health and we talk about depression, anxiety, borderline personality disorder, addiction, right? And actually he's like, that's not a wellness week, that's a sickness week, right? He's like, what about talking about thriving, connection, belonging, what makes us happy at work? So we love doing questions like, what's one thing you're proud of? How are you going to invest in yourself today? That's a great closing question, because that promotes positive accountability in your team as well. These are all ways that if a leader starts with some of these things, this then has a ripple effect and allows other people to then practice them within the culture themselves.
And then they can cascade it down. So it's definitely role modeling it. And then going back, sorry, because we went on to your point about, do HR professionals, when did we last offer that to each other? Because there is very much a shoemaker's kids don't have shoes. I see regularly, even right on the podcast. One of the podcasts I did about this time last year, because I remember feeling I was quite unwell, and I just know I'd been physically unwell, but then I felt my mental health was going down. And I did an episode on practicing self-care. And what's interesting is it was one, well, actually it has been downloaded more since, but when I looked at the ones that people were listening to, they were all about helping other people. It's almost like sometimes, no, we can't possibly look after ourselves, but this whole oxygen mask on first. So saying again to HR professionals, let alone all the key workers and people out there that are relentlessly giving to others, HR professionals are like key workers in a business. Are we looking after ourselves? Because if we are looking after ourselves, we are role modeling it, which is leading by example, but also it means we are better able to support other people physically and mentally. But really nice practical things there. The whole thing about empathy is very interesting. I often reference this book. I trained on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey many years ago. And one of his habits is seek first to understand. And people always think about that as being active listening. But he talked about the highest level of listening as being about empathic listening, where it's not about fixing it. It's just about reflecting the emotional feeling and taking that kind of, it's fine just to think, oh, that sounds really hard. I'm really sorry to be that. We don't have to feel we fixed it. Actually, you're helping by just listening to people. Now, and clearly signposting in a business environment, if someone is very sick and they're opening up, or you can see it's a starting point of something, then signposting to your mental health aiders or advice lines, I guess, is helpful as well. And I guess just on those sort of things, one of the points there about how would you, that mental first aiders, I hadn't even heard of a couple of years ago. It's something that it's there's more of it about, that might be my ignorance, but I wonder whether we use it well enough, or how we can maximize those kind of resources. Have you any observations as to what's worked there?
Absolutely. I see so much invested in first aiders or champions, you know, a variety of things, and which is great. And these are often really passionate people that may be volunteering, that may be going through an application process. They're not getting paid extra. They want to be part of something. They want to be part of culture change. But what I see is 6 months, 12 months later, their morale drops. Nobody's really going to them for support. It's like, who are they? You know, nobody really knows, you know, that kind of thing. And so this is a resource that can really back up HR and L&D and these sorts of teams, because they want to help, but we need to empower them to be able to. One of the ways is having that clear strategy and mission. And I love, like, not just having a dusty document on a shelf or in the cloud, but having, you know, translating it into some internal branding, a one-page infographic, something punchy, something that you can see in one image. Bring that to your first aid kind of committee meetings, your leadership training, and then discuss with them, how can you bring these objectives to life as in your day-to-day life, not just when somebody proactively comes to you and says, I'm having a bad day, right? So we're not utilizing them if they're the people waiting for others. Like, who are people going to go to? The person that's waiting, but you don't really know what their story is or how they're connected to this topic, or the ones that are proactively saying, hey, what's one thing you're proud of today? It's really great to see you. Or like, I just thought I'd pick up the phone if it was hybrid work. Just wanted to connect and see how you are, right? That's a totally different culture than waiting for the problem to arise, if that makes sense. So I would say, what are those, the frequency of meetings for this group? How are you empowering them to be your backup instead of going, oh, we're now really worried about them talking about this topic because they may say the wrong thing. Let's just give them a meeting every quarter and actually, you know, not empower them to do anything because we're a bit nervous about it. Like, ask yourself as an HR business partner if that may be playing a part, right? But then what happens in that meeting? Is it just, here's more things on your to-do list? Or is it, this is where we inspire each other and model the behaviors here too. I've been to so many, we call them huddles for mental health champions or first aiders. And I go, how's your mental health? Like, this is the group that should be okay with it. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm super depressed, but I don't call the EAP myself, right? So this is an opportunity to really inspire and lead and for these guys to be the foot soldiers for change. You can see I could talk about this all day, but those are some
really
of my
useful. It's really practical, though. It's nice. Really, the examples, I think, are really helpful. And again, you've linked back to this sort of connection and belonging piece there. So, you know, mental health group, if they're getting together quarterly, are they modeling those behaviors and listening to each other and actually building their own confidence? Because you can go on the training, whether it's a day or 2 days, but then how do you use it? And the other thing that's coming through is this whole idea, which is almost mental health is a muscle, almost like physical health, and the positive psychology angle, which is really good. We must look at that podcast, that TED talk, and I'll put it on the show notes. The whole positivity, because you can swing people around and go, okay, so what's good about things? So shall we focus on all the doom and gloom? And in lots of businesses, life is quite tough at the moment. It's an uncertain environment. Yeah, okay, some are thriving, but you know, we always go through ups and downs in businesses. But what's good? Because it's usually something that's good. What are we grateful for? And that can really, so it just switches around how you feel, doesn't it? Changes your psychology, and that's massive. And that in itself, okay, building that positive muscle rather than the negative muscle that we might have found ourselves trapped in using. So it's very, very, and again, by sharing that, you're getting that sense of belonging if you're part of a group as well, which is really key. So I like that in terms of getting the most out of our networks and things like that, and empowering them. Were you saying then that you'd almost empower them by allowing them to just phone people up at random, or say that that's something that we suggest as a business? Or shall I put you as a manager, say, why don't I put you on the quarterly chat round with mental first aider? Are there any sort of processes that you're advising there that can make it easy for the mental health first aider to reach out?
Yeah, so first of all, it's that practice, like you said, confidence, so they get the behaviors. And I would do a challenge if I did my mental health champion training with them. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to challenge you to connect with one person. And that is, it's a low bar. It's not saying, have you been feeling anxious? It's going, hey, you know, how are your kids doing? And just really listening and practicing those behaviors. The more you do that, then the easier it is when somebody is bringing something difficult to you.
Do you think mental health first aid needs rebranding? Because it's a bit like that thing, isn't it? Because it's like saying, so you're going, it's, you're a connection consultant, I guess,
I don't want to speak for MHFA England, because I know they're doing great work in doing workplace mental health courses and doing things that are a bit more accessible to different people. But I do say it's about the strategic, like, how is it all tied together within the business? Because they at the moment don't do the aftercare, like what happens next. They have refresher training. So that, you know, they will skill you up, but you're responsible for how that fits into the overall picture of the business and where you want it to go from a mental health perspective.
Yeah. And the concept though, first aid, is it's an emergency, isn't it really? Whereas your point really about connection, if I'm a connection consultant, for argument's sake, my new rubbish word term, that my job is to connect with people, which is potentially prevention. You'll never actually know what you've prevented, I guess, but it's by having those connections, relationship might mean that somebody therefore doesn't need to reach out for the first aid.
I also love what you said about internal branding, because when I consult with companies, we look at their branding, and you'd be surprised how many have the poster or the intranet that the first word is feeling depressed. Go see this person. Feeling anxious. Yeah. And the images are like head in your hands, despair, like I'm almost homeless kind of images, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, we talk about the 80-20 rule. So 80%, in my opinion, should be about good mental health, about thriving. It's a club I want to belong to, right?
Yeah.
I recently talked to someone in Europe who I was like talking about their mental health, and they said, well, we have a disability network. And then he admitted, he said, it's not a very attractive offer, because nobody wants to be part of the disability network,
Don't be labeled. Right.
So how do we completely radically rebrand this? And first of all, make it everybody's business. Bring your leaders in to support, to launch the strategy, to be part of it in that positive, uplifting way. But secondly, just get everybody bought in at different levels of the business so that they can actually be your backup.
Mm-hmm. It's very well-meaning, but actually when you think about it, if you are at the point where you're a bit depressed and that, you may not feel able to reach out. Whereas if you're just at that bit where you can think, oh, part of the belonging, the thriving network or whatever it might be, and encouraging people to engage, and then let's link this into hybrid working, because actually isolation is one of the issues which can reduce your levels of belonging. So how do we encourage people to collaborate and network in order to increase their belonging, which in turn the byproduct is mental health? But that's, maybe it's how do we encourage that sort of thing.
You totally get it. I mean, in the UK, Mental Health Awareness Week in May, the theme is loneliness. And so for us, the focus for 2022 and what all like managers, leaders, HR are asking us for is, how do we do connection and belonging in a hybrid world? Because some people are going into the office, but nobody's around them. So they're like, great, right? And then like my people aren't here anyway. So it's you're
That's
still
actually even more lonely
isolated.
If you go somewhere where you're used to seeing people that you have, and it's suddenly tumbleweed, that actually is worse probably than being at home.
And you're still on Teams or Zoom meetings, but you're in the office, and maybe somebody over there is in the meeting as well. But because lots of people are at home, we're still doing it in this sort of way. Right. So I think it's affecting my soul. I'm working from my living room, where I used to be like flying to places and speaking at conferences and, you know, being with people. And now it's all this sort of connection. Right. And it's painful. Like I have to follow my own advice and what we call complete the stress cycle every day, which means shaking it out of your body. So it isn't just a cognitive self-care piece. And it's great that you've recently done a podcast on this, but it's a physical act. And when we're sat all day, not feeling physical contact or connection through eye contact that's real and genuine, it affects us. And we have to counter it in lots of different ways.
So what's completing the stress cycle to you? What does that mean?
Yeah, so there's a great book about burnout. The Dr. Amelia Nagoski. I'm throwing so much stuff at you. I hope people can keep up.
Well, okay, so look, I'll grab all of these on email if that's all right for you, and put them in the show notes so people can go and grab the
links. Yes, perfect, perfect. So there's a great book, and they do some YouTube stuff as well. But their concept is completing the stress cycle. There's several ways. One of them is physical movement and realizing that it's about shaking out stress from your body. It's not just it's nice to have a walk or it's a change of scenery. What you're doing is preventing the stacking effect of stress in your body. And then they've got some great ones, like the evidence behind the 20-second hug is evidence to like reduce that cortisol and that stress hormone, prevent burnout. And if you have a consenting partner, the 6-second kiss. So think about that. Like it's just, there's actual some evidence about preventing burnout, but it just highlights.
Don't try this at work, guys.
don't try it at work. And it does, if you have a pet, if you're living
on your own,
that actually.
I was just wondering about pets. So yeah, the visits from the cats and stuff, that works. Yeah.
It works as well. And you know, we're not all going to be doing all of the list of them all the time, but it's going, what are the top three that I could incorporate into my life in order to look after myself? And then with my team, we'll ask, how have you completed your stress cycle today? So that's right. Like a positive way to encourage personal responsibility on the topic.
It's interesting you say that. So, you know, I was saying it was a year ago, over a year ago in November, I found it quite hard as it got dark. And I started doing exercise first thing in the morning and a walk, and also trying to practice a gratitude type thing about what's positive about it, because there always is. And that maybe is my stress cycle. That's something that I try to do. And then the cat generally comes along, and there's family and stuff as well. So I'm fortunate I've got stuff at home. But I think that's quite important to me. I notice my own well-being go down if I don't get that. And it helps me doing it at the start of the day, because I think sets me up for the day. And also, I'm less likely to not do it. I find if I've not done the exercise by 9 o'clock, it's probably not going to happen. It's a declining likelihood. So that's whatever it is that's part of your renewal activities, and to take you through them. Great. Okay. So it's full of good stuff here. What else? What about how do we get leaders in organizations to take this seriously, to buy into it really properly, as opposed to just pay lip service to it?
Lots of ways. There's probably a whole podcast we could do just on the business case, but there's lots of reports out there now. There's lots of statistics. I mean, I'm finding it's hard for leaders to ignore the topic now because of the world that we're in. The World Health Organization is talking about it. The occupational health standards have something around psychological safety, psychosocial safety, they call it. So there's lots of reasons, evidence, numbers for why this is important. The Business in the Community website has a report every year. So there's that piece, getting the buy-in, which releases budget and allows you to kind of move forward. And then there's the behaviors, the proactive bring it to life piece. Is mental health on your agenda at board level, right? Is it talked about? Do we get, like when we run a webinar or a training event, we'll always say, who's a top leader in your business who can introduce the session? So just the simple act of showing their face and showing alignment with the topic for 5 minutes, it's a quick win for them in their busy schedules, elevates how your employees are receiving the topic and realizing that it's a strategic approach, right? So the more you can just give the leaders easy wins. Do you mind? Here's a brief. Here's a little script. Can you just speak to your heart from your heart for 5 minutes about why this topic is important to you? Yeah, sure. Like they often want to help, but they don't know how. And then we get this siloed effect with HR business partners, diversity and inclusion. Everyone's like squirreling away trying to get stuff done. They're really busy, but they need those easy wins. We're doing a launch event on the strategy. Can you speak for 5 minutes, 10 minutes on this topic? Things like that, just to give them ways to get involved.
So just make it easy for them. And if you do have someone who's really good at sponsoring and is actually prepared to share their own, they're from the heart views, and that's really powerful as well, I guess. Great. Absolutely. Okay. So, I mean, we've covered quite a lot of content here, Petra. It's going through my head that maybe we should talk about doing another podcast on certain things here. What in terms of the last sort of few minutes, any top tips that you would share for people as takeaways?
Absolutely. Well, a strategic approach is crucial now. So it will help reduce your stress, because it's like, we're doing this awareness thing, we're doing this and we're doing this. And it's like, is it aligned to that mission and your objectives? And that just acts as your North Star. It can be reviewed, of course, but it just allows that consistency. And if you're surveying your people and, you know, there's a whole bunch of information there, you can then begin evidencing the impact of the things that you're doing, right? So that's going to help then with the business case overall. And I would just challenge every listener that I know it's cheesy, but you can be the change, you know, because we're waiting for everything to be perfect and everything to be like a perfect setup or a budget or whatever. The conversation you have with one person today, right now, can make a difference. Now, if we're all doing that, that's the world of work that I want to live in. Does that make sense?
Yes. And actually, just remind me of one thing that's come out of, I did a webinar, I think, on something like this. And this is that some people were doing in one of the early lockdowns, but we should still do this because hybrid working is here to stay. And they were talking about buddies almost, you know, once a week, phoning someone different or having a buddy that you just check in with that wasn't in your immediate team, that you didn't have to check in with and wasn't necessarily a pre-friend. So just having almost a tree, I think they talked about, you know, like, you may or may not, I remember back in the days of telephone, we used to have a snow line where parents had a list of people you had to phone if the school was closed for snow. But it's kind of the well-being line, just the buddying connection. So yeah. If you formalize things with a bit of lighthouse, then that would be quite nice as well. So little ideas like that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I guess maybe listeners might share some ideas that they're doing in their organizations, because it's great. It is the inspiration that other businesses do that we can all learn from. Petra, how would people get in touch with you if they would like to know more about PBC, what it is you do, and you know, more guidance? There's clearly lots that you can share.
Yeah, I've packed this conversation. Thanks for having me. So LinkedIn is my happy place. I put lots of content about mental health at work. So my name, Petra Velzibor. And then our website as a business is petravelzibor.com. So my name as well. And you can find that through my LinkedIn. So please connect. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to help.
Fantastic. And we'll put all of those links on the show notes as ever. You can go to that. And, you know, the TED Talk and the various other links that you mentioned, I think would be brilliant if I can get those and put them on so people can reach out from there. Petra, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining the HR Uprising podcast.
I really hope you found this week's episode useful and enjoyable. If you did, perhaps you could recommend us to a friend or colleague, or give us a review on your platform of choice. It really helps new listeners to find us. Now, you can access links to any of the information mentioned in this show via the website www.hruprising.com. Further free resources are also available at www.actus.co.uk. There you can also find out more about our software and training solutions. Finally, why not join our LinkedIn group, the HR Uprising, to share ideas and collaborate with other like-minded people professionals. Thank you for listening to the HR Uprising podcast.